This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, we'll hear about how we can find and put to use the best and most current medical information. Our guest is health researcher and writer Carol Sweck. Carol Sweck is the author of After Any Diagnosis, How to Take Action Against Your Illness Using the Best and Most Current Medical Information Available. Carol Sweck specializes in explaining complex medical issues to consumers. She has more than 20 years' experience in research. She's written extensively for consumer health publications and websites. Listeners, you can join us with your questions and comments. I look forward to your telephone calls. Here are the numbers. In the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. If you're outside the area and it would be a long-distance call, use the toll-free number 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Carol Sweck's book, After Any Diagnosis, has been named one of the best consumer health books of 2001, and it has just received a Silver National Health Information Award for patient education books. The book is available in paperback from Three Rivers Press, which is a division of Random House. Again, the phone number is 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Carol Sweck, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Oh, I'm delighted to be talking with you.
When I go to see the doctor, an appointment has been made, and depending on what I've told the person scheduling my appointment, I'll probably spend between 8 and 15 minutes with the doctor. Is that pretty typical?
Actually, there was a study done recently that says that the average office visit is 18 minutes, which is not a lot of time when you consider everything that has to go on during the average office visit. And I think that's one of the reasons why we feel so much frustration when we go to see the doctor right now. People are constantly complaining about not having enough time, not feeling like they're being heard. But if we are able to prepare ourselves in advance, there's a lot that we can do to move the process forward and take better advantage of that health care.
Yeah. Well, because that's the way it is, the doctor and I need to communicate clearly with one another. Do you have any suggestions for us in terms of making those precious minutes count?
Well, the most important thing is if you're going for something specific, let's say you've been diagnosed with a particular illness, you need to go out and educate yourself as much as possible about that particular disorder. If, for example, you find out you're a man and you find out that you have something wrong with your prostate, you don't want to have your doctor spend a good 10 minutes explaining exactly what a prostate is. Go out, find that information for yourself so that the doctor can spend valuable time telling you about your treatment options instead of some of the basic anatomy. On a more specific level, I've talked with hundreds of doctors about this issue, and they say when you go in, so many of us come in with this barrage of questions. Narrow it down to three. A doctor can comfortably handle your three most important questions. Anything more than that, and they start to feel overwhelmed and may feel like they need to rush you out. Come in with your three most important questions written down, because it gets very frightening in the doctor's office. I had one doctor tell me that sitting in a doctor's office is like trying to take a math test when you're cold and naked, and nobody can think clearly. And so write everything down. Write down your three questions. If you find after the visit that you have more questions or that the doctor wasn't particularly helpful in explaining things to you, perhaps because of this time constraint, ask if there's a nurse or a physician's assistant that you could talk to. Get all your questions out. And also, tell your doctor everything. This is another important point. We tend to think about our needs from the doctor. What do we want to learn from them? But they need to learn things from us, too. They're not mind readers. We have to be completely honest. If we are not taking the medication we've been prescribed, for example, tell the doctor why. Are you having trouble remembering it? Is it because the medication tastes bad? There are so many different options right now for helping people to comply with medical therapy that the more the doctor knows, the more you can be in this really good partnership and work through the best treatment.
Mm. In the book somewhere, I think you state that it's been estimated that when we leave the doctor's office after we've talked with the doctor, generally speaking, we don't remember everything that the doctor said, and it's really a small fraction of what we've been told. Is there a way, do you have any advice for us in terms of trying to pay closer attention? Should we take notes? Should we record what the conversation was like?
For the average office visit, you can ask the doctor to repeat things. You can write things down when you're in there. When you're talking about something that's extremely stressful, if you've had a diagnosis of cancer, for example, or you've just had a heart attack, when we hear these things, our brains go in these little fritzes, and you won't remember anything that the doctor tells you. In those cases, doctors have told me they highly recommend that you either bring somebody to the office visit with you. This is another person, another set of ears that can be kind of a sounding board. Did I really hear that correctly? You can have discussions with that person later. Or ask the doctor if you can tape record the session. Many doctors will allow this. Some doctors might feel uncomfortable about it, but if you explain that it's not for lawsuit purposes, but simply so that you can get all the information, many of them will be very happy to have that. And, you know, and in some ways, too, it works as a backup for them as well to make sure that they do tell you everything that's important.
Mm. From the observations you make in your work, generally speaking, how are doctors and patients doing when it comes to having a good working relationship?
Much, much better than it's ever been before. And that's for a couple of different reasons. First, doctors are being trained now on how to have very good doctor-patient partnerships. They are trained in patient communication. And this is something that's pretty recent. About 5 years ago, I don't think there were any medical schools that were offering classes in patient communication. When I wrote the book, and the book was written about two and a half years ago, although it was only published last year, there were about 15 schools that offered patient communication classes, and now there are dozens and dozens of them. This is increasing, so doctors are becoming increasingly aware.
Mm.
On the other hand, patients are also becoming increasingly savvy about all medical information, in part due to the internet, because they have access to the very same information that doctors do. They have access to medical journals. They have access to all the government websites that can tell them everything they need to know about treatment and options. And they know so much more that they are demanding more participation. And really, on both sides, that's healthy for everybody.
Hmm. We have a listener waiting to talk with us on line one in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I really think you're giving critical information. I'm a family practitioner. I work at the University of Illinois, and I think it's important that patients come in with lists, written lists, and I agree about the three most important things, but I think other questions ought to be there, too, and I think that even in the short amount of time we're given to spend with our patients, that we can at least acknowledge that other questions or problems exist, even though we may not have time to fully address them at that visit. We can say, you know, these are really important also, and we need to make an appointment to give special time to this too. And I think it's very important that people be heard and that our patients are our partners. We can't do it by ourselves, either one of us. And also, it's important, I think, to bring a list of every single medication that you're on, whether it's herbal, over-the-counter, prescription, every medication. If you're fortunate enough to have a personal data assistant, it's easier to keep it updated in there, but even just on the back of an envelope is just great. And I plan to get your book, and I want to thank you so much for this afternoon.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you. If I could just piggyback onto that, she's absolutely right about bringing lists of medications and supplements and herbal therapies, but it goes beyond that, too. If you want to talk about lists, we can talk about lists. One of the things that I recommend in the book, and I provide some templates, are for all the information that you do need to be providing your doctor in that visit. And again, when they're written down, you remember them, but it's also much easier to just pass them on to the doctor without having to waste the valuable time. For example, your doctor is going to need to know, what new symptoms have you been experiencing since your last visit? What things have you tried? Have you tried, you know, maybe some stress reduction therapy? Have you gone for massages? Have you done anything like acupuncture, plus all the medications and supplements? They're going to want to know things like what are some of your concerns? Again, it may be in the area of side effects from the medications that you've been taking. And all these things can be dealt with. And the more that you track these things, the better off you're going to be. If you have diabetes, keeping very good track of your daily blood glucose levels and then presenting them, just the numbers, just give a sheet of the numbers to the doctors when you go there, and you'll be able to expedite your treatment.
Yeah. This doctor visit checklist you have in the book is so helpful. The next time I have to go to the doctor, I'm going to copy this out of the book. Here's why. Not long ago, I went to the doctor and I needed a medication. And so he said, well, here, I have this sample. Take this. Well, I didn't write down what he told me in terms of instructions for taking. Had I had this list with me, I could have just filled in the blank. So then I had to call back, but because I got home and I was like, oh, gee, what did he tell me to do? What did he tell me to do? So, you know, here, you know, you've got a thing, name of new medication prescribed, instructions for taking, side effects to watch for, how long until you see effects. These things are all written down for us, and all we have to do is fill in the blanks.
And for another reason, thank you. I appreciate that. And I believe me, I've gotten this from my own personal experience, how many times I've walked out of the doctor's office and, again, said, I'm sorry, I don't remember what you said the first time around. Please tell me again. But very often now, you'll have doctors who phone in medication prescriptions to the pharmacy, and the pharmacy will fill it, and you'll come pick it up, perhaps even at a drive-thru, as I do, drive-thru window. And you can get the wrong medication prescribed if someone does not hear this correctly. It's like playing a game of telephone. The names of many medications are very, very similar. And I've known people who have gotten the absolute wrong medication that was off by two letters. And if you have the name of your medication written down, you could check it against the prescription when you bring it home so there's no medical errors.
What a good idea. Let's talk with some other callers. Next, we're going to go to a caller in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I have some suggestions that I'm pass on something that I've been doing for years and years. Doctors dictate the record, into the record, what they saw and what they prescribed and all of that. I always get a copy of that dictation. And at Christie Clinic, they charge $5 for three pages to be picked up by the patient. That is immeasurably helpful because I have picked up some errors, not a huge number. I've seen in black and white what he prescribed, what was said, what he discovered things or she discovered, things we really that sort of went past me. It's enormously helpful. Recently, my husband had some problems, and we had a lot of medical tests. And having those records meant that I didn't have to call back. There were a lot of technical terms. This is the other point. I have in front of me the HarperCollins Illustrated Medical Dictionary, which is so useful because things that I couldn't figure out, I could write down at the bottom of the page what they meant, and suddenly it all became clear. And really, it makes me makes us better patients. We come in and we don't have to go through all of this, and the doctors have said that to me, that I come in informed and we can discuss it. And having those records are really very, very useful. And most people don't know about that.
That's excellent. That's excellent that you can do that. And it's not only helpful for yourself, because like you said, you can take it and have it and peruse it when you have a little bit more time. But if, for example, someone has diabetes, you're going to be visiting many different specialists. You'll be seeing an endocrinologist. You'll be seeing perhaps a cardiologist as well as your primary care physician. You could take these records every place that you go, and you're going to have this continuity of care. It's a wonderful practice.
As you say that, I can track what's going on. If I get my reports on the urine and blood tests, I can see where they've been up and when they've been down. I can track. I don't make my whole life my medical records, but obviously it's very important to be able to track it and keep those records, because at one time one specialist that we saw wanted to do a test. I said, but my husband had this just a year and a half ago. Well, he said very offhandedly, we couldn't find that. Well, I got those records, and I found when he had had it, what the results, and it was an invasive test, and we didn't need that again. And as it turned out, there was nothing there. But I think that in order to do that, you have to double-check on what the doctor is saying and have that kind of confidence that you are in control of what's going on in your body.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that aspect of control is so important. When people are as active as this caller is, when they take this kind of control, you see so many benefits to health. There have been studies going back 25 years that show that people who are this active are hospitalized less frequently, they get better faster, they lose fewer days of work, they report less depression, better quality of life, and even very specific things like cancer patients will have fewer chemotherapy side effects when they take this kind of active role and are in partnership with their physician. It's absolutely wonderful what you're doing.
Yeah, and then you can go in and talk to the doctor about articles you read and come in informed, not laying a whole bunch of articles on the table and saying, you know, you read this and tell me about it. You sift through it yourself, and as you said, three questions, or at least distill the information you want to seek out.
Absolutely. Well, and there's nothing wrong with asking your doctor if you do have some confusion about some of these articles. But again, like you said, three questions. That's plenty. One, you know, just a couple per visit. And if you find that you have any additional questions, the previous caller said, make a special appointment. And some doctors now are willing to answer general questions like this over the email. And so if you have a doctor who's willing to do that, you might be able to pose questions once in a while and have them answered that way.
Okay. And this information that you're carrying with you and that you're collecting and mulling over and that kind of thing, that's that sense of control that you have over the situation's got to go a long way to helping us cope with the fear factor.
Oh, absolutely. And that's so much of getting better is getting past the fear factor, to know that you are in control and that you're actually doing something for your health. There are so many physicians who will tell me over and over again that the sense of control, the sense of help, of understanding what's happening it's almost in a way of I don't want to just overstate it about the idea of the sense of hopefulness that can be curative, but there's something to that.
Let's talk with another listener. I want to thank that caller who we just talked with for her telephone call this afternoon and her suggestions. Very good. And we'll go now to another listener in Urbana, line two. Hi.
Hi. I was diagnosed with a need for an operation on my left hand. And they asked me if I had any particular doctor I wanted to do it, and I said, well, the doctor who did my right hand did a very good job, but we had a disagreement about my work after it, and I left rather angrily. But so he assigned me to some other doctor to do the left hand. I thought about it again, and I thought, that doctor did the one that I had a disagreement with did such a good job on my right hand. I really would like to have him do the other hand. It was 16 years ago, and I'm not mad at him, and maybe he's not mad at me anymore. How can I diplomatically find out if he's willing to do my other hand? What's a diplomatic way to go about it?
That's an excellent question. The same, and what I would recommend after interviewing physicians is treat that physician the same way you would treat, say, a best friend that you've had a disagreement with. We wouldn't necessarily just assume that everything was fine. But I don't know exactly where you left it with that doctor, but I think starting the conversation with, you did such a fabulous job on my right hand, and I know there might have been some hard feelings along the way.
Should I write a note to him? Because you can't ever talk to them, you know. You can't ever get through to them. Can't interview them.
If you could make an appointment and not to, you know, not an sitting in the office draped in a gown kind of appointment, but an appointment to talk in his office, sitting in the chair where you're face-to-face, that'll go a long way to creating that sense of trust between the two of you.
Well,
can't do that, then yes, yeah. A letter would be wonderful.
Okay, all right, I will try to do that. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good luck. Other questions, other comments are welcome. Join us with a telephone call this afternoon. Our guest today, Carol Zweck on the Afternoon Magazine. She's a health researcher and a writer, and she's the author of After Any Diagnosis, How to Take Action Against Your Illness Using the Best and Most Current Medical Information Available. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us with a telephone call. Here are the numbers. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. You quote a professor of medicine at Tufts in After Any Diagnosis. This professor of medicine at Tufts, Sherry Kaplan is her name. She says the lifetime probability of being a patient in the U.S. is virtually 100%. In other words, we'll all need a doctor. And I would guess at some point we'll all need a specialist or more than one specialist. What's your advice for selecting, first of all, a primary care physician?
Primary care physician selection has got to be one of the toughest things to do right now. I just moved myself to a new city and have gone through this process recently. And between the physicians that my insurance will cover and the physicians that are taking on new patients and my own personal requirements for what I'm looking in a physician, it's taken me about a year to locate somebody that I'm happy with. That's not necessarily a good state of affairs. But those are some of the things you have to be concerned with. You have to be concerned with, first, who your insurance is going to let you go to. Then you need to find out if they are taking new patients. Proximity is another important thing for a primary care physician. When you are very sick, if you've got the flu, for example, and you're just feeling absolutely miserable, or how far are you going to want to drive in order to see your primary care physician? And that was one of the issues I ran up against. The first person I chose happened to be 40 minutes away from my house, and when I got very ill one time, I realized there was no way I could go see my doctor while I was still this sick. Beyond that, there are issues that become important to the individual. Do you prefer to see a man or a woman physician? And that's very important to some people. Where the physician did their training can sometimes be important. It's more important for the specialist than it is for the primary care physician. But you want someone, not necessarily where they went to school, but where they did their residency training. Because the busier the hospital, the more urban the area, the better chances that they've had experience with a wide range of diseases and conditions and will be better prepared to deal with just about anything.
Do you recommend checking out their records in terms of their licensing or any problems that they've had in terms of complaints and that kind of thing?
The licensing, those kinds of things, there are places you can go to check that out. It is very rare that you'll find a doctor who's practicing without a license, and those cases always make 60 minutes. You can check those out. You can certainly ask at the office to see the license, and you should be able to see the information. And in terms of complaints, it's a tricky, tricky question. Sometimes that's very difficult information to get hold of. Other times, the information may not necessarily reflect anything that is important. For example, one of the issues is, let's say you want to find out how many times, if you're looking at hospitals, it's an easier example, what the death rate is in a particular hospital, and you find out that the death rate in this hospital is very high. Well, why is it? Is the hospital killing its patients, or is it that this is such a top-notch hospital that all the toughest cases go there? And because they are more difficult cases, a greater percentage of those people will die. It's a hard thing to judge why these kinds of things happen. The best way to choose a specialist is to find out names of people that are recommended by other people you trust, whether they're people in your community, your friends, your neighbors, your primary care physician. I've had doctors recommend that you walk into the department of a hospital, let's say the cardiology department, and ask some of the nurses there who they recommend, who are some of their favorites. And if you catch them on a moment when they're not overly busy, they'll give you some straight answers.
Very good advice. Let's talk with another caller, a listener in Aurora on the toll-free line. Hi.
Hi, good morning. As a nurse, I find this very good programming, and I compliment that woman several callers back about how she takes care of her medical situations. It was a very, very good and very, very good way of doing it. I also make a list before I go to the doctor because, one, it's a good way to engage the doctor's interest. He sees that you're interested in your case by the questions you ask. Primarily, though, what I was calling about was I recently, last week, had a daughter that had esophagus surgery and was very run down because she couldn't eat for weeks she went in and had the surgery from 8. She had it right into Chicago, to be driven to Chicago. She went from 8:30, the surgery started, till 10. And they wanted to have her leave the hospital the next morning. Her daughter, her sister, who's a nurse at that hospital, interceded and asked them, please, to keep her another 24 hours. She did not go in the night before. She had to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to be there by 5 o'clock for the surgery, and then till they work her through, et cetera, et cetera. Could you explain to me why the conditions are the way they are? And does the doctor ever intercede for the care of the patient?
Well, I mean, I'll answer that to the best of my ability. I'm not a physician, and I don't work in a hospital. I do medical research and writing. But
I'm sorry.
That's okay, but from the information that I hear from physicians that I interview, first off, the less time spent in a hospital is usually better, and that's one of the reasons, insurance costs being the other, that the stays in hospitals are so much shorter. We've all heard about the rate of infections in hospitals.
Yeah, that I understand.
So you want to spend as little time there as possible. And some studies have found that letting people go home is often better. You're more comfortable at home. You can sleep. You're not interrupted. And so unless someone feels a very strong reason why a person should stay, and obviously the nurse who interceded did feel that way, it's not necessarily a bad thing to be released. However, if you or your doctor or a friend or someone sees a real need to have extra days, certainly talk to the doctor. The doctor may simply be following a particular schedule that he or she needs to get people out on according to either the hospital or their insurance requirements.
But these can be overridden. That's where you said it, insurance requirements. That's what gets me. Thank you so much.
Oh, good luck.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. 333-9455, the number in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455, the number to call anywhere else you're listening outside the Champaign-Urbana area. On the program today here on the Afternoon Magazine, we're talking about how we can find and put to use the best and most current medical information. We've also been talking about how to find a primary care physician, how to keep track of our records, and that kind of thing. Our guest this afternoon is medical researcher and writer Carol Zweck. She's the author of After Any Diagnosis, How to Take Action Against Your Illness Using the Best and Most Current Medical Information Available. The book has just received a Silver National Health Information Award for patient education books, and it was named last year one of the best consumer health books. Best consumer health books of 2001. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. A diagnosis can be a pretty scary thing. We've been talking this afternoon about, you know, having information and how powerful a tool it is. But, you know, sometimes we're not quite ready to have so much information. Sometimes we feel a little uncertain about how much we want to know. What are your thoughts about that, Carol?
Well, there is no such thing as having too much information, and that's something that many people worry about. If I go and I get all this information, will it overwhelm me? Well, it will if you're not ready for it, but you cannot get too much information. What you need to do is let your heart and your mind be your guide on that. Take what you can at a particular time, digest it, use that information, and then move on and look at something else, and then move on and look at something else. If you're looking at a chronic disorder like diabetes, for example, which is so prevalent, you're going to be confused if you try to learn everything in the first week. But you'll be living with this diagnosis for many, many years, so you'll have your time to learn all about it. And just take that time. But eventually you'll get to the point where you won't need that medical dictionary. You'll know all the words by heart, and all the information will come much more easily.
Mm. Let's talk with another listener on line one in Urbana. Hi.
Good afternoon. Would you please spell the last name?
Certainly. S as in Sam, V as in Victor, E, C.
S.
S-V-E-C.
Okay, and then you pronounce it what?
Zvek.
Thanks a lot. Very interesting program.
Okay, thanks for the call this afternoon. I am pronouncing your name correctly, aren't I?
Absolutely.
Good, okay. S-V-E-C. That's a good thing to remember for me as an interviewer, is sometimes when we say an individual's name on the ear, it's difficult to know how is that spelled. If I want to look for somebody's book or more information, how do I find them? S-V-E-C is Carol's last name. Well, let's go back to getting our hands on information. When it comes to learning about an illness or a condition, there's good news and bad news. The good news is there's a lot of information out there. The bad news is there's a lot of information out there. You recommend developing an information search strategy. What does that entail?
Well, it really depends on the type of diagnosis that you've just received. For someone who's received a diagnosis of, I'll use diabetes again, a long-term chronic illness that's not immediately life-threatening, I recommend that slow, methodical way of going about gathering information. And this means going to the library as your first bet, reading some of the books, which will give you a good basis for understanding, and from there moving on to, you know, asking your doctor more questions, maybe moving on to the internet, and building this groundwork, kind of like going all the way from kindergarten all the way through college in terms of your education about your disease. However, if you have been diagnosed with an immediately life-threatening condition, it's more important to gather the critical information fast. And in that case, the best thing to do is to talk to people first. Talk to physicians, talk to specialists, talk to other people who have had this disease, and you can usually track them down through the doctor's office. Many people will offer to talk with other patients through some of the disease organizations, multiple sclerosis organizations, cancer organizations, support groups in your area. Find out what are the best sources that they've used, what information places would they recommend. I wouldn't necessarily take all the information at face value, but their sources are so important because many people have gone through this before you. Take what they've learned and use it for yourself.
Okay, very good. And then organize this information that you gather, just like you have your medical records organized.
Absolutely. Put everything in a binder. You can find ways of organizing it, and in the book I talk about specific ways that you can organize it in tabs. But what I've found as I've talked to people over the past couple of months is everybody has their own way of doing it, whether they put piles of papers in various parts of a particular room or they like to keep meticulous records, as long as you know where to get the information. Could I just mention one very important resource I found is one of the best-kept secrets in terms of information?
Sure.
That people don't know about. In fact, I never knew about in all my years of doing research. And these are consumer health libraries. And you can find these from the Medical Library Association website, which is www.mlanet.org. And what these are libraries that are usually attached to a facility such as a hospital or one of the universities, and they will give you information about your disease, usually free. Some of them are philanthropically funded, and I mentioned one in my book in particular, that if you call or you email, they will send information free of charge anywhere in the world. Some of them might charge for photocopying. Some of them may only allow access to people who are treated at that particular hospital. But you could walk in and say, I have just been given a diagnosis of this. Please give me all the information you can, and they will take care of the first information hunt for you. Hmm. It's absolutely wonderful resource.
Give us the website again.
Sure. It's www.mlanet.org. Net. That's MLA as in Medical Library Association, net.org. And once you're on that site, look for the little section that talks about for health consumers. Click on that and you'll find the links to tell you where to find the consumer health libraries in your area.
Okay, very good.
I know that there are some, I believe, at University of Illinois in Chicago.
Okay. MLANET, MLANet.org. Another great source of information that we don't often think about is government publications and websites.
Absolutely one of the best information places around. Everybody thinks of government documents as terribly complex and impossible to get through. They have some of the best, most consumer-friendly writing there, and it is based on only the best medical science. And if I could tell you real quickly how to get access to some of those very fast, because you've got so many different organizations, all the National Health Institutes and the CDC and FDA. If you want to streamline it, go to my mind just went entirely blank. www.healthfinder.gov.
Okay.
And what that is you can either do it like a browse, or you can plug in a search term, and it will return not information, but sites that you can go to that have been pre-approved by government agencies as being valid and wonderful medical sources.
Okay.
And one of the things about the Internet is that good sites only connect to other good sites. Bad sites connect anywhere. So if you start from a really good site and only connect to sites that they connect to, you can't help but find only good information.
Okay. And for folks listening to us this afternoon, let's say in an automobile, what I'm going to do is after the show, I'll see that our website, the WILL website, has these websites that we've just been talking about with Carol Zweck on our website. So if you don't have a pencil and paper handy at the moment, don't worry. We can get the information to you later. Before we go, I for sure want to talk with you about the value of health information in mass media. Every day the newspaper has health news in it. I would like to know your opinion about using mass media, the value of mass media as a health information source. What's your opinion?
Quickly, right?
Well, we've got a few minutes here.
Well, the thing that I like to tell people is, first of all, it's a value to alert people to research that is being done. However, in the mass media, what often happens is that the most spectacular, the sexy, the most broad types of studies are the ones that you hear about. You don't hear about all the studies that failed to find any kind of a relationship or any of the things that have to do with more rare disorders. But you need to look at these things. And what I like to tell people is that medical information, putting this together, is like putting together tiny little pieces of a huge puzzle. And any medical story that you hear about on the television or read about in a newspaper is one tiny, tiny little puzzle piece that goes into this huge mosaic. We may or may not know exactly where that puzzle piece fits. And so before anybody gets overly excited by a particular finding or overly depressed and pessimistic, you need to ask a couple of questions. First, does anybody really know what it means? And usually there'll be commentary in there where people will say, well, we don't know what this means yet, but, well, that's when you can say to yourself, all right, then we're not sure where to go. Find out, was the study that they're talking about done on animals or humans? Rats are not humans, and humans are not rats, and you really can't make the connection. And if they find, for example, the very optimistic thing that they were able to cure cancer in a mouse, that doesn't mean that that treatment is going to work for human beings, unfortunately. Was a study done on men or women? And it's not necessarily an equal thing. What other factors were involved? The number of factors that are involved in each and every one of these studies is enormous. And until you can have perhaps three or four studies that say the exact same thing, don't either pin your hopes or become too depressed whenever you hear something in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. But, again, you can use it as a starting place to do your own research, to go out and find out exactly what that study said. Or cut out the newspaper article, for example, take that as your one question to your doctor and say, does this pertain to me? And if so, what does it mean for my treatment now?
Mm-hmm. And also in terms of evaluating a news article, let's say that was about a study that was done, how many people were involved and over how long a period of time? A couple of other good questions. And where was it done? What's the credibility of the organization?
Sure. those are absolutely wonderful pieces. I forgot to mention, thank you for reminding me, the more people that are involved in the study, the better. If a study involved 10 people, don't believe it. It's a starting place for the researchers. It shouldn't even cross your radar screen. If it had 100 people, that's better. 1,000 people is even better. 100,000 people, you might start to believe that, because then you're talking about some really definite numbers. And you want studies that are done in some reputable places. You want studies done that are done in the large universities, that are done by the National Institutes of Health. These places have very stringent protocols that allow the results to be interpreted in a very specific way. Mm-hmm. Those are all important questions.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to another source of information that can be very useful, and that's a plain old-fashioned book. And you can go to the library or your bookstore and look for books that would pertain to your situation. But in terms of sizing up the value of a book, what kind of advice do you have for us, Carol? How do you go about evaluating whether or not a book will be useful?
Oh, sure. It's a great question, because we tend to think about going to the library very often as the be-all and end-all of information. Books are good for background information or for information that is not likely to change. So, for example, if you want to know what diabetes is and, you know, what's going on in the body, there are books that can tell you that are absolutely wonderful and can do it very clearly. However, if you want to know what is the latest cancer treatments, you will not find that in a book. What most people don't know is that it takes between 4 months and a year for a writer to write a book. And then it takes approximately 9 months after the book is done being written for it to hit the bookstore shelves or the library shelves. So by the time you're picking up that book, the information in it is well over a year old. So unless you're talking about something that is long-standing, again, the anatomical information, don't go for anything that's brand new. For that, you're going to need to hit your doctor and the internet, where you can get the more recent information.
Okay. Now, for people who are listening this afternoon who are thinking they'd like a couple of basic books for the home library, do you have any recommendations?
Absolutely. Everybody should have at least one medical dictionary. And you need to go out and take a look at these. You can't just order one off of the internet. You need to go to the bookstore. You can order it off the internet once you decide what you want, but you need to look at several of them, because they are made for different people. There are some medical dictionaries that are made for medical students, some that are made for high school students, and some that are made for the average public. Some have pretty colored pictures of really disgusting things that you may or may not want to see, and others have more complex definitions. You need to look up a word that you are confused about and do this in perhaps 3 or 4 different dictionaries and see which one gives you the best sort of definition that you can understand. I also highly recommend that people get a home medical guide. And these are some of those large books that are put out by the American College of Family Physicians. John Hopkins has one. Harvard has one. And these are the ones that you can open to, and they have little brief snippets about encyclopedic information about various diseases. And these are easy for those times when you get confused about some very general things. It can give you background information, and it's just helpful to have those there. But again, when you go look at these, look at them in the store. Some of them, I've seen some of them that weigh approximately 5 to 7 pounds that are very difficult to lift. And I have just about all of them in my home library. And I find that there's just one or two that I keep going back to because they're the right size, they have the information I want. So take the time to go and really look through these.
Mm. We're out of time. I want to thank you very much for talking with us this afternoon.
Thank you so much. I'm so pleased to be able to talk with your audience about this.
Carol Zweck has been our guest this afternoon. Her name is spelled S, as in Sam, V as in Victor, E-C. And she's the author of After Any Diagnosis, How to Take Action Against Your Illness Using the Best and Most Current Medical Information Available. The book is available in paperback from Three Rivers Press, which is a division of Random House.